folks. Welcome back to yet another episode of Fresh Juice, an indie game podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tommy Fresh, and joined, as always, it is...
Maddie Juice. Juice.
And boy, oh boy, do we have a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about a new... I don't even know how to kind of categorize this game. It's like a tower defense, multiplayer co-op, MOBA battler. I don't know about MOBA battler, but it has feels of one. This is going to, we're going to be talking about Orcs Must Die Death Trap. Now, if you're new to the show, this is a podcast. And we're going to kind of catch up a little bit, talk about some news first, and then maybe in like 10-ish minutes, we'll start talking about the game. But we're very excited to talk about it, and we hope that you stick around to listen to us talk first. So if anybody is excited to hear us talk, well, you come to the right place, because we are one of the best podcasts out there.
That's true, said
by Reader's Digest 10 years in a row. But excited to talk about Orcs Must Die, Death Trap. But first, we do have to say, what's going on? Let's catch up a little bit.
Yeah. You know, doing good. Just kind of did some house stuff over the weekend. Went to like a little family party for my wife's cousin's kid at a, like this Italian place in Staten Island. It was good. Great Italian food, like family style. So that was delicious, you know. They also had, you know, they brought like, it's called Patrizia's. There's a few of them in Jersey.
Oh yeah. There's a new one in Matawan, right?
Oh, is there? Okay. I don't know. I've been to the Red Bank one, a few times, but, yeah, it's good. Good family style Italian food. And, they had like, you know, it was like a kid's party. So they had, some, you know, like not clowns, but like balloon animal people. Elmo. And Elmo was there. Yes, he was. Yes, that is true. I did send a Snapchat of Elmo, who looked perfectly at the camera right at the end of the video. That was great. So that was a good time. But other than that, yeah, just doing some stuff around the house and nothing too exciting, really. Did boot up some No Man's Sky, which is cool. You know, I'll talk about that a little bit in the news, but probably going to be getting back into that with one of my buddies, Astro, who is brand new to the game. We just picked it up, so probably we'll play that later in the week. But, yeah, other than that, not too much going on. What about you, Tommy?
Not too much. First of all, Astro, if you're out there listening, congrats on the game of the year. That's pretty sick.
Hell but, yeah.
my weekend was fine. We, you know, the sister-in-law came up and hung out, her and her friend Jason. So they stayed over, and then we went up to like Booton, New Jersey on Saturday. We got some like coffee. There's a pretty cool coffee shop. Then we went to this Thai place down in Madison after that. These are all places in New Jersey, folks. Wonderful state. But that was good.
Up there too.
Booton is up there. Yeah,
because you don't realize how big Jersey is until you go to Booton, and you're like, wow. Jersey's bigger than I thought.
And guess what? There's more New Jersey after Booton.
Yeah.
Like a lot more, which is crazy. But it was a good time. Hung out. What did we do? I podcasted on Sunday. My mom was up, so I got dinner with her as well. So just kind of like basically just eating a lot, to be honest with you, which is good. I like eating. Eating's very cool. I was sick last week, so... Mm. It was nice to be like not sick and like start to feel not sick. So that was cool. But I did come to the realization, I want to tell you about this. And listen, Nintendo, I know you're listening, but I think, all right, whatever. The Switch 2, all good. That's going to be fun. It's going to make you a lot of money. Do you want to make more money? I'm guessing yes. I'm guessing yes, you do. We need an app on our phones that is just PictoChat from the Nintendo DS.
DictoChat. Is that basically what you want? You just want to...
DictoChat? No.
You just want to send dick pics to people.
No.
Yeah, that's what everyone used it for. Don't act like you didn't do that.
No, right? I think it would be... I mean, you could do that on Snapchat. Like, it's not like...
True.
PictoChat was like still like... like if they could just match the same aesthetic, the same like little satisfying sound cues in that that little app. It was an app, right? On the original Nintendo DS. It was sick. I think people would flock to that because guess what? A lot of Gen Z, they like their first handheld system was the DS, right? They remember the DS quite fondly, and they'll be like, "Yeah, like why am I using WhatsApp? I should be using PictoChat." I think that could make like I don't know. It would have to be a free app, but they could figure out how to make some money off. Yeah, you pay for like themes. You want a Mario theme? It's like $2. You want a Zelda theme? $2. I think PictoChat was sick, and the wiener pictures. Yes, that happened a lot. But I do think a lot of people were using it safely.
Yeah. It was a really cool part of the DS, just like just being able to send messages back and forth from like, I don't know, a Nintendo DS. Like it just and obviously the stylus was a big part of that. So how would it just be, you know, you just use your finger on the app or like would they have like a virtual stylus that you somehow use to like for that nostalgia reasons?
Jeez, well, here we go. You could use your finger, but guess what? You want to order a classic Nintendo DS stylus? Boom.
There you go.
Orders it right to your house, connects to your Apple Pay or whatever.
Oh.
Like, you are Golden Grahams, and you're like off to the races. You're going to be doing really well with your new PictoChat stylus.
Yeah. Great idea. So,
anyway, Nintendo, my DMs are open.
I would just like to see that on the Switch. Too.
Oh yeah.
Well, the Switch too, but you know, just like it'd be cool to have a PictoChat app back on the Switch.
I think so. I mean, for God's sakes, they're putting it as a Super Smash Bros. Level.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why stop there? Just give us PictoChat back. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. What the hell, Nintendo? Don't give us Switch 2.
PictoChat.
PictoChat 2. Yeah.
Oh man. What features would you want PictoChat to?
Different thicknesses of the lines. I don't know if that was in the original one.
I think that was
in the original. Was that in the original one?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, maybe like a collaborative canvas, you know?
Ooh.
So it wouldn't just be messages. You could be like, hey, here's a collaborative canvas. Let's like draw something together.
What about animated messages
so you can send. Yeah.
That would be really cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's what's up with me. That came across in my mind and I just needed to bring it up on the podcast. So we do
looking forward to that comment that drops. I want to hear about
PictoChat too. Yeah, for those for the little juice heads out there, people are upset when we talk about our lives on these videos and these podcasts. So we're going to keep doing it. We do have news, though, because guess what? We're still not at the game. Can you believe it? We have some news. First, we have a Discord. If you want to complain in real life or close to real life, hop in the Discord. It's also a great place to ask listener questions. So pop in there. It's a good time. We got great people in there. We're all very nice. And we take complaints like a champ, too. Yep. So we haven't... It's not like we've mentioned it 10 times so far. But, you know, other than that, I did want to bring up kind of a disappointing story here about Hyper Light Breaker, which came out in early access. This is the sequel to Hyper Light Drifter, which was kind of a indie smash hit from quite a few years ago at this point. And unfortunately, it entered early access to some very disappointing reviews, people kind of feeling like this is kind of an empty game. And I know that the developers worked really hard, and it kind of comes in conjunction with the next article where this could be a game that ends up being great, but it currently is just not that great at all. So it's kind of a bummer, and I wanted to get your opinion on it because I know Drifter, top-down, 2D, basically, game where this is your 3D version of it, right? That's kind of open world. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the technical jump to that left a lot of the core like substance of the original game. And, you know, do you think that maybe just Drifter should have Drifter 2 should have been similar to Drifter 1?
You know, I think like I applaud the developers for trying to kind of do something new, but in obviously in the same vein as the original one. But I do think that there is, you know, there's probably complications they didn't like account for, right? With it being like a 3D kind of game. So, you know, obviously now in hindsight, yeah, it makes more sense to just do like a true sequel to like Hyper Light Drifter. But the good news is this is an early access game. It is $30 though, which is a little steep for an early access game. But I guess they thought that was a justifiable price because of the success of the last one. So the good news is, you know, it's still a work in progress, but I know I've seen a good amount of people, complain about some core issues with the game, like the difficulty scaling. Apparently it can be really hard in the beginning. And then if you gear up properly, it becomes like really easy. So it seems like there isn't really like a middle ground or a gradual buildup of difficulty, which is obviously something you would want in a game like this. So, you know, I understand the frustrations from the players, but I do think that, you know, like you said, this could be kind of a redemption story for, and I do believe like because these developers have already had a smash hit that they're going to kind of see it through. And I'm sure this game will end up being something that, kind of wins over people. But what I would have liked to see with a game like this is, you know, rather than launching an early access, because it's so different from the original, maybe have, you know, some open betas, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if they probably had some closed betas maybe or invite only. I don't really remember seeing open betas for this game, but I think that would have been a better way to do it. And it would have been a lot less harsh criticism because it'd obviously be a beta. So I do think there is some leeway because it is an early access game, but I think because it's so different from the original in terms of like the perspective and just the overall kind of look at the game and the mechanics of the game, it just kind of would have been better to kind of have a gradual buildup to early access versus maybe what they did. So yeah, I have faith that they'll figure it out, but it is disappointing because this was actually a game I've only ever watched Hyper Light Drifter. I've never really played it. But this was a game I had on my list ever since I saw it because I was like, oh, I really liked the way Hyper Light Drifter looked. You know, I added it to my wish list. And honestly, I didn't even realize it came out. So that was another thing too, is like, you know, maybe it's for the best because of what's happening with the game right now. It's maybe a little bit under the radar, but for the fans of Hyper Light Drifter, I definitely understand why they're disappointed with the release here. But hopefully, you know, they kind of see it through and fix some of these core issues.
Yeah, and that's like actually the kind of positive spin here is it looks like Heart Machine, I believe, is the name of the developer, is pretty like all in, right? And they are ready to make the changes or at least try to, which is pretty good to see. And, you know, there's no real reason to not have faith in them because Hyper Light Drifter, which a game is one that I played and really enjoyed. It's such a great game. They clearly have the talent and, you know, it's going to be probably a long haul and it might be a really long early access, but I hope it really pans out for them, you know, because we've seen success stories, right? And I think a big one there is No Man's Sky. And, you know, that was a game that when it came out, didn't really deliver on a lot of promises. And here it is with a new update again. And is one of the best games on the market.
Yeah, so that kind of leads perfectly into that next story of Worlds Part 2. Update for No Man's Sky released. And yeah, this is like just a perfect example of a great redemption story. They've released like over 20, I believe it is now, over 20 free updates for the game. And it's just a completely different game at this point. So this one in particular, you know, added apparently billions of new star systems, trillions of new planets, which is exciting. But also, it also introduced some new planet types like gas giants, which is really cool. And part of the reason, you know, I kind of mentioned I was getting back into No Man's Sky is whenever they do a big update like this, it just kind of, I just want to boot it up, start a new save, and explore and see what's new. There's new like water technology. A lot of their updates are really focused on like the tech of the world, which is really interesting because they're also working on Light No Fire, which is a apparently, you know, it's clearly inspired by No Man's Sky. It's going to be the size of a planet, an actual planet with oceans apparently as deep as our oceans, and it'll be more of like an RPG where you can a co-op RPG. So kind of I kind of picture like a more finely tuned No Man's Sky. So apparently what they're doing with these latest updates is they're learning these sort of things for Light No Fire, and then they're also applying them to No Man's Sky at the same time. So like this new water technology they actually have in this game or in this update is like water planets. They have like better water physics. So if you fly your ship over water, it like kind of does what you expect it to do. And it really makes these like super beautiful moments. And I've seen so many amazing clips from this update of just like, wow, this is like incredible, like the scale of this game, and just like the variety now that you have when exploring is really impressive. So yeah, just, you know, I obviously No Man's Sky has done this time and time again. Hello Games has just done a great job, but I just kind of wanted to bring it out in the news in case there's anyone out there that still hasn't given No Man's Sky a second shot. Apparently, this is the best time to do it. I've seen so many people say that this update in particular really ties things together. And I've even seen people say that this update is completing No Man's Sky, even though they plan to do more updates after this one. So yeah, just some exciting stuff. I'll probably end up streaming some of this too, which will be a good time. So check it out. Maddie Gorm on Twitch. But yeah, some cool stuff here. And, you know, like you said, the flip side of that Hyperlight Breaker story where this is a true redemption story that is just always gets me excited when they release a new update.
Yeah, it's an awesome game and it's like so important for gaming, and like it's a great like kind of example to look at for these other developers, right? And yeah, you just know that Heart Machine's looking at it, right? Like, okay, we know this can be done, right? We can do what No Man's Sky did. So I am really excited for Light No Fire, though. That sounds like more up my alley than No Man's Sky, but
yeah,
you know, I played No Man's Sky and had a blast. So
yeah,
can't wait.
Yeah, tell me what else.
What else we played? Orcs Must Die: Death Trap.
Oh.
Which is the newest addition or addition to the Orcs Must Die franchise, I guess. Orcs Must Die: Death Trap combines chaotic third-person combat with devious trap-laying strategy. Enjoy endless replayability as your war mage grows stronger through roguelike progression. Repel relentless orc hordes solo or with up to 4 players. What we have here is kind of like a third-person action, what would you call it, tower defense game?
Yeah.
I mean, get right into the gameplay. I'll start, I guess.
I'm going to start.
So I didn't get to play with anybody. The one day that Maddie was playing with some people, I had to do some editing, and I was also a little sick that night anyway. So fortunately, I played solo. So a lot of my opinions of this game is going to be based on my solo experience, but I'll explain why I think it might still apply. So I hopped in this game, and right away, it felt pretty familiar, I would say, to a lot of other similar, I would say, these MOBA-style games, right, that we've seen, these hero shooters or whatever that we see a lot of. So you just like pick a character and you hop in and you're in like one map and you're doing one thing. And I didn't really know it was a tower defense thing right away. And then, you know, you kind of get the tutorial going and you start laying the traps and kind of figuring out what's going on. I think it's pretty straightforward, this gameplay, but I kept finding myself a little board. And I just felt like you would lay your traps, and it's like any other kind of tower defense. You can see in the map where the enemies will be coming. So you can lay your traps and try to make them go a certain route so that maybe it takes them longer, or you can go kill them. And that's actually the big twist here, right? It's not just your traps and towers or whatever killing the enemies. It's also you, right? You can go around and melee attack them or whatever, depending on the character that you played. Now, in the video right now, it's the fox character, which is what I played with the daggers. Or maybe it's the cat or something like that. So I'd be setting these traps, and I play a decent amount of tower defense games, so I understand the kind of progression here. You lay the traps, where you want to do them, and you want to be strategic about it. But I found personally that the actual action game aspect of this, this third person, hack and slash in a way, was taking away from the experience of the actual tower defense. Because the cool thing about tower defense games to me, and this is probably pretty specific because I'm not sure about the other Orcs Must Die games. I have to imagine they're somewhat similar, but I like kind of being able to watch my towers do their thing. And you can do that, right? But you can also run around and whatever. Maybe you lay your traps where they're coming out of the gates or whatever, and then you go back and defend your node or whatever it is that they're trying to attack. So I felt like it was kind of like a cognitive dissonance in gameplay. And then also the maps were, I felt, a little big for what this game required you to do. And it kind of created this weird, uncontrolled chaos, even though you know where they're coming from and you know what they're going to do based on the planning stage. You could see little ghost version of the enemies and see
there's an ad,
free ad for whatever mobile game that was. For the listeners at home, don't worry about it. You could see what they plan to do, the enemies plan to do, and little ghost versions. They're in the planning phase for each
wave.
Yeah. And that's all fun and good. It felt weird to me, and I can't really put my finger on. Now, I played solo, and there's definitely a possibility here where playing with other people is probably a better experience, but I don't think it fixes the core issues. I think that playing with other people probably is more fun because misery loves company, right? You're just oh, whatever, we're having a good time. This game kind of sucks or whatever, but we're doing it. And that's just kind of where I fell. I played a couple times. I did a couple runs, and even I just felt really bored, right? I didn't feel like it was that challenging, to be honest, too. Obviously it was early game, so I wasn't doing the more challenging challenges, but I didn't feel like I was doing the roguelike thing where I'm really getting past these waves and I really need whatever benefit I'm going to get, whatever little roguelike-y Slay the Spire style three option thing I'm going to get after I beat a wave, right? It just felt like, oh, okay, this is going to make just my easy run easier because I already put down a lot of this kind of trap and this is going to buff it. It didn't feel like I was that challenged, but that was just my experience. I wasn't a huge fan of this. It just was, a little bit stale for me. It just there was a lot about this game that felt empty and not really well designed, and like I said, there was some cognitive dissonance with how the gameplay works. So that's where I landed on the gameplay.
Yeah, I think you make some good points. You know, I originally played solo, and then I did like the co-op with some buddies. And I think also, you know, I don't remember if we mentioned this, but I think it's important to know that we've never played the Orcs Must Die franchise before this. So we're just kind of basing this off of like our vanilla experience with this one. And I agree. I think, like you mentioned, the maps are too big. That's actually what I've seen a lot of feedback from Orcs Must Die fans saying, that the maps are just too big. And I think in a tower defense game, that's like a core issue, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you're obviously trying to set up these routes. And when the maps are too big, it seems like just wasted space at the end of the day. Now, they do something helpful, which I don't know if every tower defense or Orcs Must Die game does this, but in between phases, they're kind of showing you the ghost paths and the pathing of like where these enemies would go. So you kind of have an idea where to place traps. But I almost feel like that wouldn't even be needed if the maps were smaller, because then you would obviously kind of know maybe the directions that they probably end up going. But I will say playing co-op definitely is a better experience, because you're coordinating with your team, right? You have a limited number of traps to use, or barricades, I should say, to use. So trying to figure out, you know, what are the best routes for these enemies to go. And then we even set up like a kill room, basically, where we just invested a lot of our points and traps into a specific room and tried to guide as many enemies that way as possible. Then you also get like a few exciting moments where like it's like, oh, there's some flyers coming in, so you need to you know, have someone go deal with them because they can fly over the barricades. So there's like small moments like that. But I will say, like, I felt like a good amount of my time was spent really like not doing too much, figuring out, like realizing, you know, and again, I'm probably not playing on the hardest difficulty, but realize, like, feeling like I just needed to spend my money to put some traps down versus like being like, I need these traps in order to make it through the next wave. Most of the time I was just like, I'm going to just place these here. I don't even know if these are really going to help. And we just like made it through the next wave, no problem. Now, I was playing with two friends that they've played the previous Orcs Must Die game. So they even played the beta, I believe, for this game, which is interesting too, because their progress carried over into the full game, which they didn't expect to happen, which is a little bit of a weird thing, but I can, you know, it's not a PvP game, so I guess it doesn't matter too much. But honestly, you know, there's core issues, right, with the game. I use a character you can unlock in the lobby area. It's a secret character. There's like five like puzzle pieces basically that you can find, and once you do that, it unlocks a character that has like, he's got a crossbow like one of the other characters. He's got like a double jump. He's got like bombs he can shoot out. And he was fun to use. Like, I appreciated having a little bit more range. I did try the Fox character at first, and I just didn't like being so close quarters. But I do agree, there's like a weird, you know, typically with tower defense, I don't know, I'm more thinking of the strategy of the whole map. I don't really want to go out and fight things. So that might just be like an Orcs Must Die sort of thing, that's what that player base likes. But I did find it a little bit odd. But my big issue with the game is that this boasts being a roguelite, and I felt like the roguelite features were pretty like half-baked that I experienced. Like, I expect in a roguelite game that like every run really does feel like different, or maybe every other run feels like pretty different. And in this one, I just kind of felt like a lot of the upgrades that you get are just like these incremental changes that just give like a small upgrade to like your traps or like, you know, your character itself, your cooldowns. Like, it just, I don't know. I was looking for more things that were just made it a lot more fun, you know, maybe like increasing enemy speed by like 2 times or something like that, where you're like, oh my God, this is going to be a lot harder now. Or like, I don't know, just something that like had more weight to it. I kind of felt like, you know, they call them threads in this game, where like after each wave, you can choose a thread and you can unlock new ones as well. There's like some interesting things where like there's like thread quests that you can get. So if you do a certain number of things, you unlock a new thread that's now in the pool of threads. So that's kind of cool. But I just felt like most of them were like, I was like, I don't even know if these are making a difference. I'm just kind of choosing, like, I had an acid trap going. I guess I'll just choose the one that gives me like 10% more damage on the acid traps. I don't know. It didn't really, it felt like it just kind of was thrown into the game. And like, I don't even know if I needed it. Now, I don't think the other Orcs Must Die games are roguelites. I don't believe that they are. I could be wrong about that. But I just really was looking forward to like each run being different than the last. And there's another ad there. So it's perfect. We had some issues getting the gameplay up on the recorder here. So we got some weird setup now. It's showing some ads. But yeah, so that was my biggest issue. It just kind of felt like the roguelite stuff was half-baked. The core gameplay, like with the actual character, like everything like feels good, you know, like it, you know, we'll talk about the looks of everything, but like I think everything was like well built other than the maps being a little too big. It's just kind of like the other stuff, the spice of the game. Like, it almost feels like it doesn't have like a soul. I don't know. Like, you know, it does feel weird. And, you know, I put in a few hours into the game too. Like I gave it a good chance. Cause I was like, you know, they've obviously put a lot of time into the game. But I just, you know, I wasn't really crazy about like the depth of the game. Now, you know, there's like a trap shop, there's trap upgrades, there's a thread shop, thread quests. Like I said, there's a skill tree. Even the skill tree itself didn't seem too exciting. There was like stuff in there. I wasn't, you know, usually there's like something when I'm hovering over things, I'm like, oh, I really want to get to this part of the skill tree. Like playing Path of Exile too. Like there's things in that where I'm like, oh, I definitely want to get to that part of the skill tree. Playing this game, there was nothing. I was just kind of choosing random things in the skill tree that I was like, yeah, I'll take a little bit more health. I'll take a little bit more, you know, attack damage. And I also, you know, I had an issue with, they do a decent job with the onboarding and the tutorial, but I feel like the hub area could be better explained. I didn't really, luckily I played with some people that could explain it to me. But I was like, what is this like NPC? Like they're, why are they, what are they giving me here? And then there was even a point where a bunch of the NPCs had like an exclamation part of exclamation point above their head. So I'm like, oh, they have something new. And you go visit them. And then when you're in their inventory, nothing has an exclamation point in there. So I'm like, well, what was new? Like, I don't know what was in here before. So there's like weird, like quality of life things that I think need to be updated as well. And this is not an early access game, too. This is like fully out. So, yeah, there were like weird kind of things with that. I've seen a lot of people that are Orcs Must Die kind of purists, I guess, that were just hoping for Orcs Must Die 4. And this is kind of what they got. And I without even playing the other games, I can kind of understand like their frustration with this one. Because I feel like there are some good parts of it, but then there's some just kind of half-baked parts that really just kind of make it, yeah, a little boring. But I will say, you know, obviously playing with friends, it's a better experience, like Misery Loves Company, like you said. So If you did want to play it again, Tommy, I would recommend playing it with some of the fellas, just cause it can be fun. But yeah, I agree with a lot of your points there. It just kind of feels like a half-baked kind of game.
Yeah. It's kind of a shame. I think really it's just the design of the game. Like the actual mechanics just felt like on paper, you're like, this sounds sweet, right? Like, you know, I'm running around, I'm placing these like traps that are basically like tower defense towers. And then I'm also going to run around and do melee attacks to the enemies as well. Like on paper, you're like, yeah, that would work out really well. Yeah. And then it's just like in practice, it's just not a great combination or like, at least this wasn't a great execution of it. So story wise though, there's not a lot going on. I mean, there's these characters that like kind of have like a personality, which is nice. I mean, a lot of what you want out of like a roguelike in terms of like story, I think kind of rings pretty well here. You know, you have memorable people back at the hub. You have memorable characters to play as. The character design in general is It's pretty cool. This is a wild video.
Yeah, it is.
But like, it's like, but it's not like overarching anything. But it was just kind of like perfect for kind of what you need. Like even in the beginning, you kind of get your little cutscene, but it's not like this the deepest story of all time. So I don't know. I mean, this was like exactly what you want out of a roguelike experience in terms of story and kind of like fleshing out characters and a world. Cause it did feel like I was in the Orcs Must Die world. So
yeah.
But sorry for the ads, folks. These, I mean, we're not getting paid for them either. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. You know, not a lot of story elements. I did enjoy the, you know, you hear some of the orcs say like they're kind of dumb, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're kind of saying these stupid, dumb lines. Like those little touches were nice. I also did enjoy like that opening cinematic where like literally it just leads up to them saying orcs must die. And then it shows the logo. I'm like, oh, that's like, you know, kind of cool. Right. But really that's the end of the story, right? It's just like orcs must die. It's kind of your typical, you know, this is your big brooding enemy, and you know you have your hero classes, and you just got to go kill the orcs. But yeah, not too much story elements. Kind of what you, like I said, what you expect. There's a window on the screen now. There we go. I did enjoy like the lobby area had a good amount of character to it. Like there was plenty to look at too. So like if that kind of ties into the story a little bit. Which is cool. But I almost like in this game, I believe there is an actual story that you can play through. I'm unsure, you know, I didn't get really any other like cutscenes, but I believe there is a story you can complete, in this game. So, that's just something to keep in mind, but I would say it's not a very story heavy kind of game. And I wasn't really looking for it to be, but yeah, there's some story elements there for sure. And I know the art. What do you think about the art in the game? It's kind of an interesting take on the art.
Visuals are, you know, perfectly serviceable, I think. Like, very cartoony, almost Sea of Thieves-esque, right? You know, you get a lot of that feel where, you know, you got these nice 3D models, but, you know, kind of have this cartoonish look to them, which is nice. And I had no complaints here. I think, like, the environments look cool. The traps look neat. The animations are cool as well, and the character design of especially the enemies is like a lot of fun, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the humor in the game. There's certainly a lot of humor in this game, and it comes through in the visuals as well as some of the sound effects that we'll talk about. You know, this is, you know, by rights just a good looking game and looks like high budget, kind of along the lines of a Fortnite almost, and like even has some kind of Fortnite-esque, you know, gameplay at points, running around building stuff. But you know, this is it's kind of interesting though. Like I'm noticing how kind of popular right now this kind of art style with like pirates or like, you know, seaside markets, like the bazaar is really popular right now, and it looked this looks like it was just out of the bazaar, which is kind of funny, at least that one level, but it felt like a lot of it was like that. It's not a knock on it at all, it's just kind of interesting that seems to be kind of a popular theme in games right now. But yeah, don't hate the art at all. I mean, like there are a couple points where things get like a little like too much, especially, you know, the third person kind of gameplay will get a little crazy, but that could be more on the performance side.
Yeah, I enjoy the art style as well. I actually wrote down that it kind of had like a Fortnite art style, and this kind of reminds me a little bit of like OG Fortnite. For those of you who remember, before it was a battle royale, it actually was like a tower defense kind of game, where you had to build your kind of base. And then it was more like a horde based game, I guess, than like tower defense at the end of the day. But, yeah, it definitely reminds me of that. And I, you know, I think that they did a good job with the art in terms of like the different elements that you can use. Like I said before, I was using like acid. So like those traps, like obviously there's like spewing green out. So when you have a lot of traps going off, it's very easy to kind of see what's going off, what's working, which is good. I think they did a good job from the art standpoint with that. I didn't have any, you know, we'll talk about the performance, but there is a lot going on at certain points, but I didn't really have any issues with the art for that. I thought I was still kind of able to maneuver my way through certain things. You can actually kind of get a little glimpse of that right now on the gameplay. There's a decent amount going on with this player, but yeah. And as far as the UI goes, I think everything, it kind of reminded me of Fortnite as well. I think everything, you know, worked pretty well. I did end up like kind of forgetting a few points, and this is just me being a noob, but like how low my health was. And so, you know, I seem to always have that problem with games where I just want my health bar to be a little bit bigger or like maybe more centered on the screen or something like that. Cause I just, for whatever reason, tend to not really look, when it's kind of a little bit out of the way, but that's just kind of a me thing. So, yeah, but I do think the art is a strong point in the game and does bring those like Sea of Thieves, Fortnite kind of vibes, which seems to be, you know, a popular kind of trend that's happening right now. And yeah, everything kind of UI wise didn't really have a big issue with. So yeah, I think they did a good job from the art standpoint. No real criticisms there.
For sure. Now the sound is good. Like the soundtrack has this like medieval meets metal music, you know, thing going on, which is like not always my thing, but for this game it makes total sense. You know, I know actually, like, you know, kind of listened to some on YouTube, and you know, they only had a couple tracks, but like they were like, can you please post the rest of it? People were like commenting, you know, so I know like the fans of that genre really liked it, and like it definitely made sense here. The sound effects, especially the voiceovers, were very fun. You know, I think at one point there's like a goblin that's like, or an orc, I guess, that is, because there's flying ones, right? And yeah, there's a weird orc that is flying in a balloon and just like yeah, screams in like a high pitched voice, which like made me like audibly laugh out loud. I was like, that is probably the most fun I've had playing this game. Yeah. So especially killing that thing. So yeah, really, you know, I think the sound here is cool, and like, you know, clearly a lot of work put into it. Enjoyed it for sure.
Yeah, same here. Enjoyed the soundtrack. I kind of put like, it's like rock meets like carnival music, mm-hmm, or, you know, which, yeah, I enjoyed. Sound effects were all good. You know, loved listening to the different orcs and kind of what they were saying. So, yeah, I don't really have a lot of notes on the music. I think they did a good job. It almost just kind of reminds me of the art. Like, I think they did a good job all around. The music and the art kind of go well together. So, yeah, definitely a solid part of the game for sure.
And finally, performance. Like, I think it just sometimes it would get a little, like when a lot of things were going on, it would get a little crunchy. But it is also like a lot of things were going on, so like I understand that. But other than that, didn't really have that many issues. I was going to try to play on the Steam Deck, but there was kind of like a caveat on there that like you would need to like adjust your graphic settings and stuff like that to make it work. So I didn't even bother.
Gotcha. So yeah, I guess it's not Steam Deck verified just yet. But yeah, it ran well for me. I didn't really have any issues. When I booted up the game, every time I boot up the game and I go into the lobby, there's like a little bit of like lag, but then it kind of fixes itself. So I think that's just kind of the game booting up. But in terms of like the gameplay, I didn't have any issues. Even doing the multiplayer, didn't have any weird like rubber banding or any lagging, anything like that. So I thought that worked pretty well. It's hard to really know at certain points if there's any lag or issues with all the traps going off in terms of like the damage that they're doing, but it seemed like everything was going according to plan. So I didn't notice any issues with that either, but overall it ran well for me.
Cool. Well, That's going to bring us to our rating. And as always, if the juice ain't worth the squeeze, we'll tell you. Our rating goes as follows. Certified Fresh Juice are the best games. These are things like Norp Apple Log, Preserve, Balatro. A steal, things like Ballionaire, Crypt Custodian, Cub. Good games, not quite the highest tier, but very good still. On sale, a lot of games fall into this category. Games that, you know, maybe you want to wait till it goes on sale and maybe try it out because they're not without their flaws, but they still have redeeming qualities. Things like Wizard with a Gun, Hellscape. And then there's Manager Special, which is like really not a lot of redeeming qualities, but maybe if you're really into the genre, it might be worth checking out. Or if it's on a deep discount or free to play or something like that. And then finally, Spoiled Milk is the games that we don't think you should play at all. Matt, what'd you give Guild Orcs Must Die Death Trap?
I am giving this, so this is like an interesting one for me. I'm giving this an on sale. And I actually talked a little bit with some of the guys I was playing with that I think this game should be like $20. Like at most, it's a $30 game. I just kind of feel like it's not really worth that. So I would recommend, like, if you and some friends ever saw this game on sale, pick it up. You know, hopefully it's around $20, maybe even cheaper than that, because it could be a decently fun time with like a group of friends. But you know, and obviously, you know, I'm sure they'll make some updates as well, which will make it better overall. But I'm giving this just like a middle of the road on sale. You know, nothing to really like write home about. It does have me interested in whatever they do for Orcs Must Die 4, I will say. I'll keep my eye on it. It's kind of on my radar, but it's definitely not something I'm like, oh, I'm day one buying like Orcs Must Die 4. So yeah, just giving it a solid on sale for me. Tommy, what about you?
I'm going to go ahead and give Orcs Must Die Death Trap a solid manager special. And to be honest, like I tried to find more redeeming qualities in this game, and like the art's good and the sound's fine and the story, like, you know, I definitely named a lot of things that are good about this game, but unfortunately I do really think the gameplay really, really drug it down for me. Like I was not having fun. Like I really was not having fun playing this game, even though I was progressing through it, right? Like I understand, like, you know, maybe if it was like too hard, like I would kind of at least understand, like, okay, maybe I'm just not good at this game. But like I felt like I was pretty good, right? Yeah. But like I was like super bored, was not having fun. Now I did play solo, but like I truly think the actual design of this game was just like a little off, and that even playing co-op, I don't think I would have liked it as much. But I guess what we're seeing here is kind of the deviation, right? Maddie got to play with friends. He's a little bit higher on the game than me. So like maybe it could be an on sale if I got to play with friends. But for me, honestly, a manager special, and especially at $30, it is a kind of a commitment, because also yeah, you're going to have to expect at least one or two of your other friends to want to hop on that as well. So it's going to be, I feel like more often than not, if you invest in this game, you're going to be playing solo. Now, there are some things about it that you might really like, and that's why it's not quite a Spoiled Milk. So it makes me interested in what the other Orcs Must Die are. Yeah. But unfortunately, because this is my first foray into it, I actually don't want to play them, which is kind of funny. Like I looked at the prices of the other ones, actually. The first one's pretty cheap. So maybe, like, you know, that would be one that I kind of start with. So, yeah, kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I will say, like, because when I first started playing this one, I played solo, and I was feeling a lot of the same things you were. And then when I played with some people that have also, you know, they have experience with Orcs Must Die, it definitely started, like, clicking a bit more. But I still, at the end of the day, like, yeah, I had some kind of issues with some of the core gameplay elements. But I guess that stuff is kind of easy to overlook, you know, when you're just goofing off with friends and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see kind of are the original Orcs Must Die in this kind of format? Are they a traditional kind of tower defense game? Not too sure on that, but definitely would be interested to see that sort of stuff. But this is an interesting one, though, I think, because it's a pretty beloved franchise, I would say. You know, I mean, this is their fourth game, I guess, technically.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting coming in at that point as well and experiencing the game. And it seems like I said, like the Orcs Must Die fans aren't really that happy with the game. It's got mixed reviews on Steam. So I think we're kind of on the right track with how we're feeling about this game as people that have never played the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting, but hey, listen, as we said, the juice ain't worth the squeeze. I tell you,
yeah.
Next week is a big one though. We got Sworn coming out in early access. That one's going to be very exciting. This is hyped up by a lot of people. People love that demo. And yep. I keep seeing more and more content about people getting hyped for it. So we're excited to play it next week and review it. Now, for listener questions, these can be submitted in the Discord, which we do have. And the first one comes from Bags, who asks, who is the strongest movie Spider-Man? Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or Tom Holland? Don't take into account Tom Holland's iron spider suits, LOL. When Bags posted this, I mean, listen, you talk about Tobey Maguire, right? I mean, Tobey Maguire is the best Spider-Man, hands down. No stop. And listen, he is the strongest. He is the strongest Spider-Man, and tell you why.
Tell me.
Well, first of all, he doesn't need the shooters. He doesn't need the shooters. He doesn't need to build anything. It just comes out of his wrists. That was a great choice in that movie. I know it's not true to the comics. It's a good choice. It was cooler, and it captured the imagination a little bit more as a child. Tobey Maguire also, listen, really, like, his Uncle Ben story, that is the best one, right? Yeah. That goes into account when you're fighting bad guys, right? Right, they're all Spider-Man, so they're technically all equally strong. But I'm telling you, like, motivation-wise is pretty important. And think about the list of characters that he's had to fight, like, in his own specific movies, right? Green Goblin, twice. Sandman. Doc Ock. Venom. What else? I mean, listen, he's fighting some freaking bad mamma jammas.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's the one I grew up on, and there's nothing that's going to change my mind about Tobey Maguire. And I love Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi is one of my favorite directors of all time, and he made the best Spider-Man movies, full stop, except for the third one. But that was Sony getting mixed in. And as we've seen, Sony getting mixed in is always a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
You need to slow down your voice so you're like Moschino Dorito. Yeah.
I love that video.
Yeah, those are good.
Talk about Tobey Maguire, right?
Yeah. Sam Raimi. Talk about Tobey Maguire. I think you make a lot of good points. Okay. I think Andrew Garfield is not in the conversation at all.
I actually don't even. I think Tom Holland's out. He's out.
But how can you say that when you've seen who he's gone up against? Gone up against Thanos.
No. I said standalone movies.
Okay. All right.
Right? Like, listen, I mean, technically, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield could have gone against Thanos, too, if they had made an Avengers while they were
making this. But they didn't. I do think it's Tobey Maguire as well. Obviously, there's the train scene, you know? And, you know, and I think there's a lot more physical kind of exertion from Tobey Maguire in those movies than there is with Tom Holland's movies, because he's also, Tom Holland's character is more of a high school kid, so they're doing a lot of stuff where, like, it's him not fighting. I feel like a lot of the time in the Tobey Maguire movies, like, he's fighting a lot. Mm-hmm. I would probably say he is the strongest, Probably. Now, is this a question about if they were fighting each other, who would be the strongest?
Because, well, Toby has the most experience.
He does, yeah.
And he's not going to run out of juice. He's not.
I mean, he did.
That one time, he was just thirsty. I don't remember.
Yeah, so what happens when he runs out? He can't just put a new cartridge on. You know, he's I guess I just don't have it anymore.
Listen, don't talk smack on Tobey Maguire.
But I think Andrew Garfield is probably just not in the conversation. Like, he's like a sneaky Spider-Man. He's not like I don't view him as like a strong Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was like a gymnast style, right?
Yeah.
Which they are strong in their own right. I do think he was a good Spider-Man, just unfortunately was put in bad movies.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx, good question, though. Definitely good question. A good one, yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility. Always remember that. Always remember that. Next question comes from Eugene, who asked, I just finished Tunic on Steam this week. Absolute masterpiece, by the way. I played that game. It's very good. And it left me with the biggest game hangover. What is a game that had a large impact on your mind/emotions and left you sad that the journey of playing it was now over?
Oh, I mean, for me, I'm not choosing like indie games for this one, definitely like The Last of Us, like both of those games, like, because they're just so like emotional throughout the entire game, and you don't know how it's really going to unfold. So when it ends, you're just like, oh my God, like I need to figure out what happens next. I need to play more. So definitely both of them. And then kind of tying into it is also like the God of War games. I know the latest one I played through with Maria, like we, you know, she wanted to watch it because it's, you know, it's cool, like mythology stuff as well. And it's a good story, but there's so many like moments in that game where you're just like, you're emotionally exhausted because you're like, geez, like what the hell just happened? And then at the end of the game, you know, there's like really for all the God of Wars that I played, the modern ones, there's always like something at the end where you're just like, I did not see that coming. Probably I'm just off the top of my head, probably those two. They definitely, from a story aspect, just like they leave my mind exhausted, which is an interesting feeling, but it also just makes me want more. You know, I want more story. I want to see how everything kind of unfolds. So yeah, those two come to mind for me. What about you, Tommy?
This is a tough one. You know, there's a couple that like come to mind, like beating like blue version Pokemon when you're just like, oh wow, I did it. And then you realize like there's not really a lot of end game stuff. So you're kind of done with this world. Like, unless you want to go like catch all 150 or whatever, but like beating the Elite Four, and then you're like, oh, let me go do something else. And you're just like, all right, I'll go catch Mewtwo. And that was like it. And then like now this world that I fell in love with, I'm kind of done with. Because there's not a lot to do. Like, you know, it was before there was like end game content in video games. Like Mewtwo was the end game content. But I think a Loop Hero is one that I felt like I got kind of a game hangover because, you know, I went through the three acts of the game and, you know, kind of beat it with one character. And like, you know, I've gone back and played with other characters, but like when you beat it for the first time with the first character, you're like, wow, this like really interesting kind of like avant-garde, almost like feels like if David Lynch made, rest in peace, David Lynch made a video game, like it feels like a little bit of that, like Twin Peaks-y style fantasy game.
Yeah.
And kind of like finishing it and you're like, wow, I did it. And like that was like kind of a lot of discovery and figuring out what I'm supposed to do, like within this kind of roguelike experience that like kind of left me with a little bit of a game hangover. So thanks for the question, Eugene. Another certified banger, of course.
Yep.
Next question comes from Capolo, who asks, which video game character would you want as a pet?
This is an interesting one. Which one would I want as a pet? Man, that's tough. You got anything that comes to mind for this?
One of the chows from from Sonic Adventure Battle 2.
That's a good one.
Or a Sonic Adventure 2 battle. I guess the Sonic Adventure 2 also had the chows, but like, yeah. The Chow Garden. That was like,
oh yeah,
an awesome little like side quest thing you could do in a video game.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was like always so peaceful going there.
Mm-hmm.
Just hanging out with the chows. I was trying to think like one that I could use like as, you know, I don't know, I could like ride on it or something like that. Or like obviously like any of the Pokemon I think would be a good choice, because that like if you had just like Pikachu even, you know, or like Blastoise, right? You could just like ride, I could just sail around with Blastoise. But the first one that actually popped in my head was Navi, which might end up getting annoying, but yeah. Like just because of the nostalgia reasons, I don't know, it'd be kind of cool. Just have like a little fairy pops out and gives me some tips. Maybe I'm like working in my Microsoft Word document. I'm like, hey, Clippy's not here anymore. Navi, how do I make a table? You know, and yeah, listen. Kind of pops out, but yeah, I don't know, that's an interesting one, Capullo, because you want something that's not too annoying but also I find pretty useful. I think the chow is a good choice with that. Yeah, I don't know, I'll just go with whatever I said there.
Yeah, you can make them like evil or like good. I remember,
yeah,
I don't remember how, but those were a good time. Kmore asks, you're transported into the last game you played, not including the podcast game. How well do you fare?
Oh, well, I played No Man's Sky earlier today. I'm going to die. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to survive, because first off, you're just really alone. And then also there's just a bunch of weird creatures, things trying to kill you, you know. Maybe I'd live for a little bit, but I probably wouldn't fare too well if I was actually like a No Man's Sky person. That's why I play it virtually, you know?
Sure.
So yeah. What about you, Tommy? What were you playing last?
I mean,
Balatro.
Technically it's Balatro, right? So, but I'm not going to count that because that's kind of a constant. I mean, I am living that life already. Domekeeper. I was playing most recently, I think. And I think I would fare pretty well, because there's part of me that wants to be kind of stranded in like a dome where I got a mine and like find stuff to like upgrade my dome. That is like pretty sick to me. Like, yeah. I don't know if I would like the monsters in that game are pretty scary, I will say, but If I have everything that I am equipped with in the game already, I think that I would survive a decent amount of time. I would like survive maybe 1 year on the planet or something, yeah. Which I think is a ripe old age for a dome keeper. So 1 year, that's pretty good. So yeah, good question, Kmore.
Yeah.
Good question. And then finally, Arcarp, who happens to be my wife, we were talking. You know, there's this common saying that there's two kinds of faces in the world. There's frog faces and then there's rat faces. Mm-hmm. And it's like, she wanted to know, what do you think we are? And then also I made the argument, I think it can't be just frog or rat. I think there's other animals going on.
Horse,
pigeon for sure. I think there's got to be some fish, some alligators, some lizards. I think there's got to be at least one from each animal kingdom, at least. Yeah. But what would you say you are?
What I am? I feel like it's hard for me to judge myself. I'd have to go off of what other people say. But I don't know. Maybe like, I don't know. What do you think I am?
So she was saying that well, if it was in the binary world of frog and rat, she said that we were frogs. I don't think I'm a frog. I would say I'm more of a pigeon.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't want to say, because we look similar, we're related. I don't want to say you're a pigeon because you might take offense to the pigeon.
I'm not going to take offense to any.
But I don't pigeons, think you're much of a pigeon.
You know? I don't think so either. I don't know. Maybe
a penguin.
Maybe a penguin. Yeah, I can see a penguin. Sure. You know, I definitely think if it's between frog and rat, we're both more frog than rat.
Sure.
When I first saw this question, I thought it was like, which pet would you rather have? And I was like, oh, frog. I would want a frog for sure. Which is kind of funny because we have two friends. One of them has pet frogs and the other has pet rats, which I think are still alive. yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. You know, if you are listening and you're in our Discord, drop what animal you think you are.
What do you think we are? Chat.
Or what we are. Yeah. What do you think we are? And we'll let you know if you're right or not. And you'll win.
Trying to make a frog face.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lanta. Well, thank you for the questions, everybody.
Yep.
Keep on juicing out there. It's the end of the show, which means we got to take a little stop at the rec room where we recommend something that perhaps isn't an indie game. Matt, what do you have to recommend this week?
Yeah, so I'm recommending an artist that I found just on Twitter. It just kind of popped up. I actually think you would probably like this art that this artist does. It's actually a lot of it's like DC based. And the first thing I saw was actually kind of a abstract version of Batman. But it kind of reminds me of like Kill Knight. It's almost like Kill Knight sort of vibes. The artist is on Twitter. Their name is FazNova_. So it's FazNova _. They also have an Instagram as well. But they just have really like abstract, kind of dark, like DC inspired art. Particularly like I've seen a decent amount of like Batman related stuff, but there's some stuff there that's not like comic book related. But I don't know, it just seemed really cool. And they kind of always, all their art pieces, all the images that they post are kind of a similar theme with like this like bright red background. And then like the, whatever figures in the picture is like black and kind of dark. And, you know, they use like interesting kind of highlights and contrast, and like negative space. So yeah, I don't know, they got some really cool art, that I would love kind of a poster of one of these. I actually kind of have like, I've got Carnage back there and Spider-Man. It's kind of like almost similar sort of art to what this person does, but theirs is definitely, I think, more interesting looking. So yeah, I don't know, but I think it could potentially be up your alley as well, Tom, if you check them out.
Yeah, I actually did check it out before the show because I saw in the show notes. It looks awesome. I love those reds and blacks. I'm trying to like find, there's another artist that you might like if you're liking this, but I'll find it after. It's on Instagram. Cool. But no, that looks pretty sweet. My rec room is a book. Books, Jerry. it is. So you know, we talked about my goal for the year, my New Year's resolution, a book a month. So the book that I ended up reading in January was a book called A Canticle for Leibowitz. And it is from like the 1950s. It's kind of you know, an OG post-nuclear apocalyptic like sci-fi story, and it's what they call a fix-up book. It's by Walter Miller, I believe the name of the author is. And a fix-up book is basically, he wrote three short stories that all kind of intertwine in this world, and each part of the book, it's in three acts, are a different part of the short story. So basically what happens is there was a nuclear holocaust right around the 50s when people were really scared about it. And, you know, hundreds of years go by. Basically after that happens, the common man kind of rises up and they say, we hate smart people because smart people did this to us. And basically they had this like simplification, right, where they simplified everything. But you know, the Catholic Church is like this like cockroach that still survives even though nuclear bombs happen. And it kind of follows the story of this abbey where these monks are, and they kind of worship this guy named, or they don't worship him. They think that this guy named Leibowitz is a saint, right? Mm. And there's like some tongue in cheek stuff because obviously a guy named Leibowitz definitely was not Catholic.
Yeah,
and also. the story starts with this young monk, like out in the desert, doing like a fast, like a Lenten fast, and he stumbles upon Leibowitz's fallout shelter, and he finds like stuff. They don't know what it is because it's like 600 years later, and like basically there's no records of anything anymore because of the simplification. And they find like blueprints and stuff like that. And he also finds something that says like 1 pound of pastrami, 6 cans of sauerkraut, 2 dozen bagels, which is like, and it's like signed Leibowitz. And they're like, what does it mean? You know? And basically like him finding those blueprints kind of sets in motion for basically a cyclical thing where things start to progress over hundreds and hundreds of years again. And I don't know. It was fun. It's like a nice little read, I felt like. And if you like, like that post-apocalyptic sci-fi stuff, and if you don't mind, it's like not like a lot of action or anything like that, but like if you don't mind like the monks kind of like being monks still, even though like the world ended, is kind of interesting. So I liked it.
Nice. Now, reading a book from like the 1950s, is there like, you know, is there some stuff that you're reading where like, I don't even know what that is, or is it not? Because it's like post-apocalyptic, it doesn't really apply.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that's dated for sure. I mean, there's definitely a strong lack of female characters in the book.
Yeah.
But it's also taking place in a monastery or an abbey, so there's not going to be a lot of female characters. It's like one that shows up in the third act. And then there's like some like kind of anti-Semitism, not really, but like the way they talk about it is like not the most savory, but like also probably pretty common at the time. And then, you know, but other than that, I think you're supposed to know that this is how like humankind just tended to think, especially after like not having knowledge for so long.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
cool.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Sounds pretty dope.
Yeah, it was dope.
Yeah. Did they figure out what that meant with the pastrami and all that stuff? Or they were just like,
no, they never. I mean, like, I think like one guy like kind of hints is like, oh, that's just like food, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like it was cool. But
nice.
That's going to do for the show, folks. I am Tommy Fresh. I have another podcast called Fresh and Buds. Talk about a card game called Flesh and Blood every week. Just did a huge set review of the new set, 6 hour long video / podcast. Ooh. So you can check that out. Currently at like 995 subs on the YouTube. Go sub. Get us to 1K. I'm doing a giveaway after.
Do it.
You know, giving away like $30 cards. Crazy.
Hell yeah.
Crazy. But you can continue to find us at Fresh Juice Pod everywhere. Where can people find you?
Find me at Matty Gorm, G-O-R-M, on all the socials and everything like that. I will probably be playing some more Once Human, and then might even start doing some Light No Fire content, to be honest, because there's not a lot out there, or not a lot known about the game, so I feel like it's a good time to kind of get in on the ground floor. But yeah, check me out if you are interested. But another good ep in the books, Tommy. Very excited for next week with Sworn. We'll have to set up some time to play together.
I hope so. Maybe, yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll talk after the podcast. But, oh my God, juice!